Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project, jointly sponsored by the UCLA Asian American Studies Center and the Chinese Historical Society of Southern California. This is a duplicate tape of Mr. Alan Chen's interview from an original 90-minute tape to a 60-minute tape. Tape 2.
American fruit peddlers. You indicated there are some American fruit peddlers and vegetable peddlers at that time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it was what, predominantly Chinese?
Well, they, like I say, they have different areas they go to. They don't try to horn in somebody else's area. They stay away from, if that's your area, that's yours. And it's quite the arranged that way among themselves, that they don't try to take a business way, like the business today. Whatever they can get hold of, they take away from you. But in those days, it's your territory, it's yours. They don't bother you.
And you know, in the 30s, automobiles were coming. Why didn't the Chinese have automobiles? Why were they sticking with the horses?
No, in the 30s, they buy automobiles in the 30s. They don't have buggies.
But the peddlers were still buggies, huh?
No, not in the 30s.
Not in the 30s?
Not in the 30s.
Oh, the horse and buggy Chinese were in the 20s.
Yes,
in the 20s. In the 30s, the Chinese were driving
cars.
Cars?
Yeah, they were driving little Ford Model T Fords.
No, I mean peddling, these peddlers.
Yeah, right. They had all the trucks.
Oh, the Chinese had them on trucks already in the 30s.
On the Fords, the Model T Fords. You'd be surprised that they step up in class in the 30s.
Do you see any Chinese farms at that time?
Well, there's some Chinese farm, but they're so small that I don't know. There is a wool that's up at the San Fernando, and of course, when things go get along better, they were making pretty good. And Peter Su, who I guess is a well-known person in Los Angeles, during Depression time, the asparagus is what make him sort of a millionaire.
Asparagus?
Yes, asparagus.
What was his farm?
It's hard to get, and he's the only farm that has it. And he make a fortune of it.
Where was his farm?
I don't know. I think it's in San Fernando. I'm not sure. But he make his fortune through asparagus.
Mm.
That's just one of the thing that I know he make a fortune out of, because he's the only one that have asparagus in his kids.
What about fruit farms? You see any fruit farms, Chinese?
No, during those days, no fruit farm. It's just mostly vegetables, because they don't grow orchards at that time. Because most Americans grow the oranges, because Los Angeles is full of oranges. In those days, you can go through Riverside or Pomona, and you can smell the orange blossom in those days, but it's all American owns it.
Oh, but the Chinese just work on there.
Well, they very some hired Chinese to do in orange field, except maybe pick on them sometimes, but I don't think I first time heard of any Chinese picking oranges.
Okay. What about the markets down on 9th Street, you know, the wholesale markets? Were they run by Chinese at that time? Do you remember?
In 9th Street, in
San Pedro,
it's mostly
area.
Chinese that runs it, because they work with the farmers, and they're where they get all the vegetables, and mostly Chinese would sell it to the market, and the market sell to wholesalers or to the peddlers, and then the business was getting so good, then that's how the 8th Street Central Market opened up. It was toward the Chinese establishment that they buy the vegetables from them, and this way they have to expand. And this way they have, it's quite competitive during those days that the, say like Central Avenue, Central Produce Market, competing with 9th Street, the San Pedro Market, and this kind of competitive thing.
Were both areas controlled by Chinese?
Well, at one time, I think it was the farmers controlled it, but actually that building is not the Chinese. No, it's rented out.
Is it rented by Chinese then?
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the
Chinese rent the place and that's where the Japanese, later on the Japanese come in, and now you find a lot of Italians and a lot of other people that's in the market today comparison with the old days. Old days, just Chinese.
You mean you walk down there, it's almost all Chinese?
All Chinese. You won't find anybody else there except Chinese in those markets.
This was what, the 30s or the 20s?
It was in the 20s.
In the 20s.
They the one that established these, yeah. And then later on in the 30s and 40s, and even up to today, they're still Chinese there, but not as much Chinese as you'll find Italians in that market and other different nationalities. It's one of those produce markets.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Alan. What about the Chinese here in Los Angeles, say in the 20s and 30s? How did they get their wives?
Well, during those days, there's a lot of match marriage. Even though with kids, they match. See, well, my son will marry to your daughter, and the kids don't even know about it. And once they make the pledge or agreement, they have to get married, and they cannot break their agreement or the pledge or whatever contract they make among themselves, not even written, but they have to get married, and the girl cannot marry to anybody else except that one person. And I think that's ridiculous, and even up to the 30s it was like that.
And yeah, among the American borns too?
Yeah, American borns, they have some that done that, but not so many, because they don't know anybody in the old country. Because they generally have to go to the village to find a girl for the kid. And that's why they cost so much money to go back to the village. So they just let the kids as they were.
Oh, so not too many American born ever go back to China to get married then, huh?
Not too many. There are some, but not too many.
But the China-born, what do? They go back and get married, and
they come back here.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they don't believe in American-born, because I guess we were too modern for them. And they like the old-fashioned ways of life. But today, well, you find it's vice versa. They like the modern girls today than ancient ideas. They're getting more modern today than ever.
Were American-born, do you think the American-born Chinese were just as eager to have sons as their parents?
Well, most Chinese, they want sons for some reason.
Even American-born, you think, in the 20s and 30s?
Right, because their parents are kind of put in their heads. If you have a girl, well, you're no good. You have to have a son, because son would keep the family name. A girl would not. And that's the ridiculous part. You do. Regardless of a grandson or whatever, regardless from your daughter or from your son, well, what the difference? You're still in the family. But do we have the same blood? So we're still in the same family tree. But the Chinese don't see it that way. You just think of the name. Is more important to them. That's why they don't think about girls so much.
Did you ever attend Chinese school?
Well, I'm pretty dumb in Chinese school, because I never can learn, I never can write, because my mind is more in American ways than Chinese. And you'll find American people just like me. I'm an American-born Chinese.
What about the other American-born Chinese? Did their parents generally make them go to a Chinese school?
Oh yeah, and they do the same thing what my parents have done to me, but actually they don't don't learn as much. Some people are more progressive than I am, but I'm just not interested in the Chinese language. And for a while I between, now I'm 10 years old, I moved to American District, and in a few years I couldn't even understand Chinese. I can understand what they're talking about, I cannot speak the Chinese language at all. And you'll find a lot of Chinese that's from Hong Kong that comes here today, and they're that way because they mix with the American people so much that they lose the Chinese language. And they're from Hong Kong.
Yeah, after a great number
of
years.
They are immigrants, you know, in the I think in a few years when they are of age, when they're 21 or something like that, when they can be naturalized, where they want to be naturalized, but they cannot speak the Chinese language. You talk Chinese to them, and they kind of look at you with a frown, like just like I was when I was a kid. Surprised me. The modern Chinese from Hong Kong, they that way too, when they live for so many years.
What about right now, when somebody speaks Chinese to you, do you understand what they're saying?
Oh yeah, because I speak quite a bit of Chinese.
Oh, you can speak it now.
Yeah, well, because when I was 21 years old, it was depression time, and I had to find a job. And this old man, he was Chinese New Year, and he's such a good cook, and I want to eat his cooking. And he said, if you don't speak Chinese, you cannot eat. You got to speak Chinese from now on when you come to my house and eat. So that's the way I learned to speak Chinese. It's real funny when I talk to them, but it's so funny that they want me to talk Chinese. They won't let me speak anything else except Chinese when I eat. But I go to the house. Every time I sit down and eat, I have to speak Chinese. And I kind of amuse them the way I use Chinese, because I translate the English, trying to translate the English to Chinese.
Yeah.
And even today I do the same thing. I translate the English to Chinese, and even though it's not practically right, but they get the idea of what I'm trying to say.
You mean you actually didn't learn to speak Chinese until you're practically 21 years old?
Right.
You had to get something.
I lost the foundation of the Chinese language after I left Chinatown.
Oh, I see.
But most people, they do that. You'll find a lot of people like Hong Kong, they do that. They lose. But a lot of the Chinese that here today, they're immigrants, the parents make them read the Chinese newspaper. That's what they buy their newspaper for, to keep the Chinese language going, even if they are immigrants. It's a lot different between the old days and today.
So the American-born Chinese didn't think much of Chinese school at all. What did they think
they
about?
They did.
What do they think about going back to China? You know, these old-timers always say, one of these days I'm going to take you back to China. What do the American-born people think in the 20s and 30s, those days?
I believe that in my case, I figure they're too ancient. And, I guess they feel like just like in a farm, they have to go to the little house and do the chores there. They don't know how clean it is or like that. And this way, maybe a lot of people like to go back to China. But today, up to today, they like to go see the old country because it's modernized compared with the old days. And once you see the progression of the Chinese between the 20s and today's 80s, there's quite a bit difference, even in deeper part of China. I understand it's way different.
Did you, when you were a kid, do you go to movies often?
Yes, but mostly American movies.
Yeah. Do you ever see these Fu Manchu movies or Charlie Chan movies as a kid?
Well, during those days, they don't have too many Chinese theater, don't have too many Chinese pictures.
No,
except
I'm talking about operas. I'm talking about American movies.
Oh.
American movies, you see these Fu Manchu type of movies.
Well, they don't have Fu Manchu type of movies during those days, but they do have Charlie Chan pictures, because I work on a couple of them, because I was one of their sons in Charlie Chan pictures when they first started. And
do you ever feel embarrassed about these Charlie Chan movies, or?
No, I was with them. I was with the one or older when he first started this Chinese and Charlie Chan pictures. I make two pictures with him.
Oh.
And I don't see why I should be embarrassed, because...
Well, sometimes people see these Chinese Chinese portrayed in movies, they say, oh, it makes them ashamed, you know, because the way the actors behave.
Well, I think Warner Olin is more like a Chinese than anything. He looks identical like a Chinese, but I think he's Swedish. But he's real nice. I talk to him a lot of times. And I always say, I think you're Chinese seed. No, I am not. Because he does have a Chinese feature. And he's acting, and even he talked to you, he acts like a Chinese, like an elder people, a person of a Chinese race. And he acts that way, and that's why I always thought he was Chinese. And it's amusing to talk with him. He's real friendly. I liked him very much.
Do you ever hear anybody say they were embarrassed to be Chinese? They were ashamed to be Chinese? You ever hear any Chinese kids?
Well, there's some that say that, but I think they're ignorant people because they don't adjust themselves to what they are. They're trying to be superior, trying to be better than others. I noticed that even today, people that get the PhD degree, they think they're superior, but still, they have to realize that they have a lot of competition to get into a college to be a professor or something like that. Even they got a PhD degree, now to be a professor, well, you have to compete with somebody. And that's where a lot of Chinese, that they don't have the initiative to compete with it. Very few of them compete with them. I know Japanese people compete with a lot of people. And they take all kind of tests for principal or like that. But Chinese, I don't know why, they scared a big, compete with somebody.
You talk about the 20s and 30s, or you talk about now?
I don't care if it's 20 or 30s or up to date, the same darn thing. They always have that fear of not to progress themselves. Why? I don't know. I don't understand that. Because they have just as much opportunity, and I think they're just as smart as a lot of people. But they never go for politics or anything like that. I don't know why.
Say if you were, say, raised in the 20s and 30s, what would a Chinese parent look up as an ideal job for their kids? What would the kid have to do for the parents to say, "Oh, I'm so proud of you. You got a good job." What kind of job are we talking about?
Well, most of the time, even in the 20s and even today, they like a son to be a businessman for some reason. I don't know why.
Even in the 20s?
Even today. In those days as well as today, the comparison is no different. This one-track mind is a business. And even today, in I go back to Hong Kong or even Taiwan or different countries, the first thing they say is business. And that's all they have in their mind. But you better believe it. They're very good mathematicians. They can figure things out in seconds. And that's what they like. They like business. And because they figure they can make more money in business. They don't think about to have computers to do a lot of work for them and like that. They don't have that knowledge of what computer is. In Hong Kong, they just have computers now. And gee, we have computers, see, almost 10 or 20 years already. Because today is much better than the olden days, but we have computers for a long time. But it's not up to perfection. But right now, we're practically right up to the peak now. There's a lot of difference between those days and today, because they don't see that the modern equipment stuff. But Chinese always kind of backwards for some reason. They don't try to see ahead of a situation that's coming up. And they businesses, you figure, well, we can do it by our head, like by machines. So now they use these little dangling computer load, you know. And then they use that now instead of a Bacchus. Oh. You know, remember the Bacchus they used?
Yeah.
Well, now they use these little punch boards, you know, and they use that now instead. I remember one kid went to Caltech, and he's real sharp. But he had to use a Bacchus, but that's the only way he can figure out. And by golly, they use slide rulers, and then he can use a Bacchus and beat everybody even with a slide ruler.
Yeah, I see that.
Because they have challenged before, and they were right up to next to a slide ruler, or even an adding machine. They tried with an adding machine, and they were so close together.
Okay, getting back to the 20s and 30s, where you're talking about if if a fellow's son is in the business, he would say his son is successful and he's happy. That would be the job he would want his son to have.
Yeah, as long as it's a business. Any kind of business, doesn't matter, it's clothing or grocery store or like that. Yeah, as long as they have a business, they're proud of them.
What about if his son says, I want to be a laundryman?
Well, that's business. A laundryman is a business thing. But in the 20s, up to the 30s, even up to the 50s, the laundryman make a lot of money. You'd be surprised how much they make.
You mean the father would be happy if his son said, I want to be a laundryman?
Sure, as long as he make money. You'd be surprised how many laundrymen would have so much money and saved up. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised that even today they retire now and they still got money to, well, practically throw around. I mean, a little better than somebody that just retired or something like that. But you'd be surprised. That's why they want business. Once they have business and they keep their money and they know how to be more conservative, I think.
You mentioned that you served in World War II. What branch of service are we talking about?
I belonged in, enlisted in the Navy.
When was this?
In 1942. Mm-hmm. And we went to boot camp. And from then on, I kind of got along with some commander, and I want to go to sea. So I had to go through him and eliminate my training and still have my credit to fulfill my boot camp so that I can get promotional in the future. And by doing that, I had to associate with all kinds of people because they're white or what nationality they are. And for one Chinese in a group of 100, it's pretty hard to make them to understand me as well as trying to understand them. But to make them gel with me, I make a lot of friends and we have a wonderful platoon. And then from then on, I went overseas. And from overseas, they didn't want me to be they put me in the Atlantic. And I had to associate with people up there. And then finally, I decided to want to fight in the Pacific. So I have a terrible time trying to get myself transferred. But finally I did get myself transferred. And I got on one of the best ships that I ever remember is the Norman Scott, which I have a captain, which was prejudice of different nationality. And I put him in his place, which that gave me the best prestige I ever done for myself, even though I sacrificed my life for a general court martial for telling them of what I believe. But by doing that, I have conquered a friendship among the captain and my fellow men aboard the ship. And when we went to fought the war in the Orient, the people have fought together and we helped each other. We got hurt. We got damaged, my captain got killed, and the first one they asked me would I like to go to see him buried, and I was the first one to be asked. I'm the only Chinese among those group, and I was the first one.
What ship is this?
This was a Norman Scott.
And what kind of ship?
It's a destroyer. I'm a destroyer man. And then I went, and then we went to Pearl Harbor. For repair, I decided to transfer to another ship.
What ship is that?
Samoa, and I have the privilege of take any destroyer in Pearl Harbor because the Rear Admiral was my captain's uncle, and by this captain who I serve under, who is killed at that time, he gave me such a recommendation that's why I have the privilege of picking any ship on Pearl Harbor as long as it's a destroyer.
And what ship is that?
And I told them to pick the most and the best fighting ships I want and the U.S. Reed. And, of course, in about 2 months, well, the Japanese sunk that ship, which I suppose I'd come back for furlough. But it takes me up almost 3 months to get back to the United States because they sunk the ship and we had to go to a different hospital to be medicated, be hospitalized and so forth. And so it took me about 3 months before I get back to the United States. And all these years I have only served in the World War II about 2 years and 10 months, and I've been on 40 stores. And I have a real high recommendation from Forrester and one of his assistant, McCormick, at that time when Forrester was in the war, state of war office in Washington. And I actually enjoyed being in the Navy, excepting I had to have a medical discharge, which I would like to stay in the Navy for at least 20 years, which I would may stay there longer.
When do you get out?
I beg your pardon?
When do you get out?
I got out in 1945.
What department do you work on the ships?
I work on radar.
Radar. Oh.
It's electronic.
What's the name of the other destroyers?
Well, it was in the Walker. And
what's the other one? The Scott?
Norman Scott and the Reed.
Reed?
And I was on another one. I forgot what the name is. It's a French name. I forgot what the name of that one. That was the first ship I've been on. But most of the ship that I'm trying to transfer, the captain had a hiccup trying to change my mind of staying, but I had the right to congressmen and like that to get the transfer. So I have a terrible time of getting transferred. But once I find a good ship, I generally stay till something happens to it, and then I want to move out.
Do you still get in contact with these shipmates that you sail with?
No, you don't associate with them anymore because they live all over the United States, and you don't know where they are. Mm-hmm. And then they don't know where you are, so you cannot contact them at all, excepting some of the people that work for the civil service and they've been in certain places during the Second World War, then you can talk with them about what they've done and what you have done.
Okay.
And that's the only correspondence we have.
After you get out, what do you do then?
Well, I went to school. I went to school for about almost 5 years to step up myself and rebuild convalescing and that's why it took me so long to find a job. Although between the time I did find a job as in the county and the federal, and then later on I went back to school for about 3 years and I got water and power.
Oh, you worked in the water and power.
Mm-hmm.
That was your last job.
That's my last job.
Oh.